This is VOA News. I'm Gene Randall. Iraqi authorities today lifted a days-long curfew in Baghdad, one that anti-government protesters had defied. The toll from 4 days of violent unrest has risen to 72 killed and hundreds injured. Muqtada al-Sadr, the former Shiite militia leader, who heads the largest opposition bloc in the Iraqi parliament, says the government must be replaced with early elections, held under United Nations supervision. U.S. and North Korean negotiators are meeting this weekend in Sweden, ending a long gap in talks about the North's nuclear arsenal. Speaking at a joint news conference with the Greek foreign minister today, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said the American team is hoping to make progress in Sweden.
We're mindful this will be the first time we've had a chance to have a discussion in quite some time, and that there's remains to be a lot of work that will have to be done by the two teams, but we hope these initial meetings can set the course for a set of dialogues that can take place in the coming weeks and months that will really deliver on the commitments that were made in Singapore.
Australian Foreign Minister Maurice Payne says an Australian blogger, Jolie King, and her fiancé, Mark Firkin, have been freed after 3 months of detention in Iran. Charges of flying a drone without permission have been dropped. We got the foreign minister's announcement from the Australian TV network, ABC.
The government has worked very hard through diplomatic channels during that time to secure their release, as well as to ensure they were treated appropriately while they were detained.
U.S. President Donald Trump faces another challenge from Capitol Hill, where the majority House Democrats have subpoenaed the White House for documents related to Mr. Trump's dealings with the president of Ukraine. Meanwhile, Ukraine says it will investigate the work done by the son of former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden when he served on the board of a Ukrainian natural gas company. It is something President Trump has been demanding, first in private, then publicly. From Washington, this is VOA News. The United Nations Human Rights Chief, Michelle Bachelet, today called for a probe of the violence in Hong Kong.
We are troubled by the high levels of violence associated with some demonstrations that have been taking place in the past days, and also alarmed by the injuries to the police and protesters, including journalists and protesters shot by law enforcement officers.
Bachelet said Hong Kong, a Chinese semi-autonomous territory, should immediately carry out an effective, prompt, independent, and impartial investigation. In London, Britain's Prince Harry is at war with his nation's tabloid press over alleged phone hacking. AP correspondent Zaria Shackley reports.
Prince Harry is suing The Sun and The Daily Mirror, two of Britain's most popular tabloid newspapers, over alleged phone hacking. Buckingham Palace confirmed that claims regarding illegal interception of voicemail messages were filed on Harry's behalf. News Group Newspapers, which owns The Sun, acknowledged the Prince's High Court action, while Reach, which owns The Mirror, said it was aware that proceedings have been issued but hasn't yet received notice of them. The cases escalate Harry's fight with the British tabloids. It comes days after his wife, Meghan, the Duchess of Sussex, sued the Mail on Sunday for alleged copyright infringement, misuse of private information, and violating the UK's data protection law after the paper published a letter she wrote to her father. Zaria Shackley, London.
The European Union has rejected a British call for Brexit talks this weekend. This as Prime Minister Boris Johnson insists the UK intends to leave the bloc on the target date of October 31st, even without any exit agreement. Commission spokesperson Natasha Bertot is quoted as saying the UK will be given another opportunity to present its proposals in detail on Monday, but that the two sides remain a long way from a new round of negotiations. President Trump has signed a proclamation here in Washington that requires immigrants to prove they can pay for their own health care before they'll be allowed into the United States. A top U.S. military commander says embattled Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro is slowly but surely losing his grip on power, forced to rely on countries like Cuba and Russia, and even on drug cartels to stay in office. The chief of the U.S. Southern Command, Admiral Craig Faller, told reporters in Washington early this weekend that isolation is working. The United States is one of more than 50 countries demanding that Maduro step down, charging that his 2018 re-election was rigged. Opposition Venezuelan leader Juan Guaido is widely recognized as Venezuela's interim president. Washington has slapped Caracas with tough economic sanctions aimed at eroding Maduro's support. More news at voanews.com. Gene Randall, VOA News.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
We are fed up with this crisis. We are fed up with atrocity. And I think we want our brothers and sisters of the Northwest and Southwest to return to normal life. We want peace to come back. We want normalcy to come back.
A Cameroonian official hails the conclusion of the national dialogue to end the ongoing crisis.
Almost 3 months ago, Mr. John Abiri is still in prison because he can't meet the bail conditions. Our courts have regarded for bail conditions as a refusal of bail.
A Nigerian federal court grants bail to opposition leader Omoyele Sowore.
Why is it so difficult for Peter Mutharika to advise the person that he put into that position to say, no, Malawi must not suffer because of just you? Why is that so impossible? Why is that difficult? I'm not having to keep on blaming anybody else, and these people are doing the right thing constitutionally.
And Malawian President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika calls on citizens to respect both government and private property. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Cameroonian Communications Minister says the country should be proud of the just-concluded national dialogue aimed to resolve the crisis in the English parts of the country. Rain Emmanuel Sadi, who is also the government spokesperson, said recommendations made at the dialogue will be presented to President Paul Biya for consideration and implementation. For more about the dialogue, I reach the Cameroonian Communications Minister and government spokesperson Rain Emmanuel Sadi in the capital Yaoundé.
So I would say that gathering has been a very, very big success. You know, first of all, the attendance of all our competitors. Secondly, it gave our competitors the occasion to express themselves in so many issues, so many stakes that concern everybody. The ideas that occurred and the proposals that came out are quite interesting, satisfactory. And we can see the recommendations in all the fields that were considered by participants, either education, either judiciary system, either the living together, either digitalization. I think so many things came out. I would say that we can be proud of what we did. All these are recommendations that will be put on the table of the head of state, and he will appreciate. We will see within all that what is pertinent, what can be done today, what can be done tomorrow, and maybe what can be done in the long run.
With all the recommendations that were being considered or that will be put in front of the president to make a decision on what should be implemented, how soon should Cameroonians expect the implementation, particularly when this ongoing conflict has led to approximately 3,000 people being affected and many more injured or displaced from their homes?
Well, I think we are all conscious of the gravity of the situation. And the president himself, well, if you saw, he had a tweet yesterday where he himself expressed his satisfaction, and he promised that he will take into account all the things that were proposed, and will make sure that the implementation comes out very, very soon. So, We can trust him. We can trust him, and I think he will take into account all that was said. He knows that people are really expecting. When you see the way things went on, you can say that, well, we are all conscious of the necessity of going faster and making decisions. And I think, I'm quite hopeful.
Now, you talk about trust, but some critics of the president are saying that he has made a lot of commitment and promises which he has yet to keep. They are asking if there is any commitment to really resolving this, or this dialogue was just a mere publicity exercise to ease the international pressure, encouraging him to have a national inclusive dialogue to resolve the conflict. How do you respond to such criticisms?
Listen, I know the president very well. I've been a collaborator for a long time. He's somebody who takes time, of course, to examine issues, problems, and he takes a decision when he thinks the matter is mature. It's quite right. And he also is conscious of circumstances. And he knows that today people are waiting, they're expecting. We are fed up with this crisis. We are fed up with atrocities. And I think we want our brothers and sisters of the Northwest and Southwest to return to normal life. We want peace to come back. We want normalcy to come back. And the first person who wants it is the president. I'm sure, well, those who think that it's propaganda, I think that they're wrong at this time. We think that some measures will be taken.
What should be the expectations of those who have been affected by this conflict?
I think as far as that is concerned, I think the government is quite conscious, and we have taken some measures already to help our brothers and sisters who were affected by the situation, by the crisis. And I'm sure that more decisions, more measures will be taken and will be reinforced so that, of course, our brothers and sisters, refugees or displaced persons and the others should really come back in the country and enjoy normal conditions of living. I'm sure that measures will be taken very soon as far as that is concerned.
Rain Emmanuel Sadi is the Cameroonian Communications Minister and government spokesperson. He spoke with me from Yaoundé. Meanwhile, Maurice Kamto, the opposition presidential candidate who claimed he won the Cameroonian October presidential poll, is scheduled to be released Saturday. His freedom comes after President Paul Biya announced the release of 330 Anglophone detainees. The charges against them were all dropped. Kamto and his supporters were arrested after protesting against the outcome of the presidential election, citing voter irregularities and rigging. For more about this anticipated release, I reach his lead defense lawyer, Mekam Sotha.
Yes, today, Saturday particularly, was the opposition leader, Maurice Kamto, and his militants that were released. We're counting a total of 95 persons that are to be released today. There won't be judgment anymore. So the court session just ended, and then they are preparing their release notice. Unfortunately, Ayu Tabe and his secessionist fighters are not concerned by this particular procedure. The 333 that were announced to be released yesterday are still going on, but today was just the civil Cameroonians are sued before the military tribunal, especially the Maurice Kamto's of the Cameroon Netherlands Movement Party.
Are there any indications that Maurice Kamto will also be released since he did not commit any particular crime, as some of his supporters say?
I hereby confirm that he is going to be released. He was at the court session this morning with the other militants, as I earlier said. So he is going to be released. They are just doing the last formalities for him to leave prison this afternoon.
When was the last time you met your client, and how was his health condition since he was jailed?
I met my client just a week ago, and we met again this morning. He's very serene. His health condition is okay, and he has no other problem but to free Cameroonians from this oppression.
Does he still hold the belief that he won the last election, for which reason he called for protest, which effectively led to him being jailed by the authorities?
Yes, up to today, Mr. Kamto and his militants are still reaffirming and still insisting and claiming they won the elections. So up to now, it has not changed. And we have pending action before the African Commission and before the United Nations Commission in Geneva.
So when he leaves, what is the next line of action as his lawyer? When he leaves, what's the next line of action?
Yes, when he leaves, all charges before the military tribunal against him shall be dropped. No action will be sued again against him unless they start a new case. But for his militants, we have some militants that were concerned by the mutiny at the prison. Their cases have not yet been stated, and then we don't know already what will be done by that.
So far, how has his supporters been reacting to the news that he will be released soon? And Are they with you at the prison now as you await his release?
There is more joy with their supporters. As you can hear in the background, they are singing freedom songs. They are singing freedom songs in support of their leader. And I think the joy is general.
Mekem Sotha is the lead defense lawyer for Cameroonian main opposition leader Maurice Kamto. He spoke with me from the capital, Yaoundé. The lead defense lawyer for former Nigerian presidential candidate Omoyele Sowore says bail conditions set by the Federal High Court are overly stringent. Femi Falana says the bail conditions include preventing Sowore from traveling out of the capital Abuja, as well as depositing $138,313 in the account of the court as security. The opposition leader faces 7 charges, including treasonable felony, money laundering, and cybercrimes. The opposition leader, who is the publisher of Sahara Reporters, is accused of calling for a revolution through a protest which was scheduled for August 5. Lead defense attorney Femi Falana tells me he's consulting with his client to determine the next steps forward.
Well, the bail conditions are very stringent and extremely difficult to meet, and because they are not in line with the 30 principles of our law. And so we are meeting our client right now to think of what to do in the circumstance.
What are some of the remedies that you could come up to
aid your client? For instance, the court is restricting his movement to Abuja without providing accommodation for him. He doesn't live in Abuja. He lives in the United States and Lagos. So where is he going to get a place to stay in Abuja? And we do not know how long the trial is going to last. The court said it should be confined to the vicinity of Abuja until the trial is concluded. Meanwhile, the court has fixed 6th, 7th, and 8th of November for the trial, and there's no indication that the trial will be concluded on that day. That's number one. Number two, the court is asking one of the sureties to deposit 50 million naira in the accounts of the court. Even the allegation that the money that is so many, $19,000 is less than 50 million naira, you know. So the conditions are tough, stringent, and totally impossible to meet.
But Mr. Falana, some people are suggesting that the accusation against your client is strong and it could destabilize the country such that the court has to be tough in enforcing the bail conditions to ensure that
the country is already being destabilized by terrorists, by bandits, by kidnappers and armed, and the government is negotiating with them, granting them amnesty and giving money to them, while the same government is harassing people asking for a new country. People are challenging injustice and oppression and exploitation.
What recourse do you have in regards to what you describe as stringent bail conditions?
Well, I'm consulting with my client to determine his next line of action.
So far, what has been the response from the supporters of your client regarding this bail conditions?
My client needs people you might call the leave the poor. And so who are not able to meet these bail conditions? The rich members of the bourgeoisie will not want to have anything to do with our clients. And once you monetize bail, you keep the poor and others who cannot access funds in detention indefinitely. I mean, for instance, we got bail for another journalist almost 3 months ago, Mr. Jones Abiri. He's still in prison because he can't meet the bail conditions. Our courts have regarded some bail conditions as a refusal of bail.
Recently, you said a court also granted bail to your client. How different is this federal court in Abuja, since you said the DSS refused to abide or to respect a judgment of bail by another court?
Frankly speaking, that is part of the contradiction. Assuming we even made the bail conditions today, there is no indication that the state security service to comply with the orders of the court. There's no indication. There's no assurance. The government chooses and picks which court orders to obey and disregard.
So in this case, how challenging does that make your defense of your client?
No, we are going to try as much as possible to take advantage of the provisions of the law to ensure compliance with court orders.
Femi Falana is the lead defense lawyer for Omoyele Sowore. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Malawian President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika has called on citizens to respect both government and private property. This after a series of demonstrations organized by the Human Rights Defenders Forum, or HRDC, led to the destruction of property. The president says it will take years for the country to recover if protesters continue to destroy property of the government. For reaction to the president's concern, I reached Maurice Muntali, spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party, or MCP.
I think we also have to be looking at the people's rights and the constitutional provisions when we talk about demonstrations, because people demonstrate because that is what the Constitution allows them to do. However, the Malawi Congress Party does not condone any violence when it comes or during the demonstrations themselves. And that is what Malawi Congress Party President Dr. Lazarus Chakwera has been preaching. And that is what the Human Rights Defenders Coalition leadership has been appealing for. When we are talking about security and the destroying property in this country, we must pose a question as to where the law enforcers are. Yes, we agree that the demonstrations have to be peaceful. We also do not condone anybody who destroys property and destroys the image of our country.
Why is your party supporting such a move for these demonstrations, particularly when you know these demonstrations have turned violent, they clash with the police, property destroyed, and some lives are put in danger?
Yes, as I said in the first place, that people are not demonstrating outside the Constitution, outside the law. But the simple thing that people are demanding as they demonstrate is that Jane Ansah, the chairperson of the Malawi Electoral Commission, must resign. And that's not demanding too much from Jane Ansah. That's not demanding too much from Peter Mutharika. That's not demanding too much out of all the rights people have in this country. So what we are saying is, is it not proper? Is it not the right thing to do to listen to what people are saying? Because these are the masses demanding, other than having to keep one person at the expense of the whole country.
The government is saying that Dr. Justice Jane Ansah has not broken any law. She is so far resisting all attempt by HRDC organizing the series of demonstrations demanding her resignation and to challenging the outcome of the presidential election in court. So why support anything else when you are in court challenging the outcome of the elections?
Dr. Lazarus Chakwera is challenging the presidential results in the court of law, and that is true. As Malawi Congress Party, we are supporting that move, that peaceful and legal path. But at the same time, citizens in this country, including those in the Malawi Congress Party, are free. And I want to underline, they are free. They are constitutionally mandated to demonstrate, because that is one way in any democracy that people can express their anguish, they can express their demands to the government. And the government has to be taken into account. And in this particular case, why is it so difficult for Peter Mutharika to advise the person that he put into that position to say, no, Malawi must not suffer because of just you? Why is that so impossible? Why is that difficult, other than having to keep on blaming anybody else, and yet people are doing the right thing constitutionally?
Does that mean that because she is refusing to step down, the MCP is solidly behind the action to create tension to ensure that the country is ungovernable or destroy property and harm commercial businesses in the country, which could invariably affect foreign direct investment in your country, if I may ask that?
Yes, thank you for that question. All we are saying is the court will hear the case, and we are awaiting any verdict from there, and Why we chose that path is because we want justice to prevail. We want the truth to be known. But having to do these things concurrently doesn't mean that we are causing chaos in this country. We are not saying that we must make this country ungovernable so that everything comes to our favor. No. Those who are making this country ungovernable are those who make up elections. Those who are making this country to be ungovernable, if anything, are those who are resisting the demands of the people of Malawi. Those are the people we must blame. Otherwise, we cannot blame the masses who are doing the right thing constitutionally. We cannot blame anybody else because they are pursuing something in the court of law. And the two don't harm each other.
Maurice Muntali is the spokesperson for the main opposition Malawi Congress Party. He spoke with me from Mzuzu. The Kenyan government has concluded the demonetization exercise aimed to eliminate money laundering. About $71.5 million were not returned during the demonetization of the 1,000 shilling old notes. The Kenyan Central Bank Governor Patrick Njoroge told journalists that the four-month phase-out exercise proceeded well and achieved its overall objective of removing money obtained from illegal activity from the economy. Fred Omolo is a Kenyan journalist. My colleague Douglas Mpuga reached him in Kisumu by phone for a reaction to the demonetization exercise.
There's total confusion as far as this whole exercise is concerned. Within the government, outside the government, everyone is asking themselves what was all the fuss about. Now, last week, the central bank governor, Patrick Njoroge, gave an update. He said that there were 217 billion worth of Kenyan 1,000 shilling notes out there circulating. At that point, about 60% had been returned. That was just a week ago. And then he said that there's about 100 billion worth of these notes which are still circulating and no one is bringing them. And we hope that they do come back in the next few days. A few days later, about 3 days later, which was the deadline on Monday, I think, September 30th, suddenly the figure had risen from 60% to 93%. Everyone was asking themselves, who is this guy kidding? How did he get that money so fast? And he hasn't captured or caught any big deposits from people who are stashing this cash. That was problem number one. Problem number two, the amount that was outstanding, roughly 8%, which translates to around $70 million, 7 billion Kenya shillings, is about half of the amount of money spent in the exercise. They spent 15 billion Kenya shillings, that's $150 million, to carry out this exercise to issue these new notes. And then they end up losing 7 billion. So in total, the Kenyan taxpayers lost $22 billion in an exercise whose results are so mixed, are so full of falsehoods and confusion. Now, everyone is asking themselves, what was all the fuss about in the first place? Finally, at the street level, where you're dealing with traders and everyone, all the other older notes are still in circulation, number one. Number two, they are new denomination notes. These are 50 shillings, 100 shillings, 200 and 500. There are new notes in circulation. There's a 1,000 note in circulation. The new notes are all of inferior quality to what was originally there. So there's a lot of dismay, confusion in the government, outside government. We don't know what to make of this whole charade.
Yeah, but then the central bank says that it identified some thousands of suspicious transactions that were flagged during the exercise that are now under investigation. Do we know what these suspicious transactions are?
The truth is 99% of the transactions were below the ceilings. The 1% that were above the ceilings were people who came forward openly and willingly and admitted, I have this cash, I usually keep it at home. For example, large-scale farmers in this country like to keep large amounts of cash above the 2 million limit that they gave us. That's around $20,000. They keep this money in the farm because a lot of transactions with the laborers are done in cash. So these guys come forward and they have a very genuine and plausible explanation why they have this money. So still, there's not much that they can explain about the whole exercise. Basically, it didn't net the black money they were talking about.
And what do you think is going to be the impact on the economy as a result of this exercise?
There's already a deflation going on in terms of too little money circulating within the economy, chasing a lot of goods. And it's mild, but it's being felt across the board, across the entire country, because the circulation has been drastically reduced. It appears the money that they were trying to chase, which they thought was not in circulation, was actually in circulation. And now that they've done that, there are people who've gone under, or people who are not aware or an insignificant proportion, who still have the effect that we're having in the economy right now. So there's a little bit of a deflation going on as well.
Fred Omulo is a Kenyan journalist. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Mpuga from Kisumu. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Lesotho teacher groups have vowed to sue the government over non-payment of salaries after members embarked on an industrial strike action to press home their demands for increased pay. The teachers are demanding an 8% salary increase for the 2019-2020 financial year. They also want the government to remove what they said are ghost names on the payroll. However, the Education Ministry says it will deduct $166 from the September salaries of the 4,000 teachers who participated in the strike. Lechachi Nsebolani, spokesperson of the teachers' union, tells me the groups will engage the government to reverse its decision, contending that the strike was legal and a constitutional right.
I can confirm that about 4,000 teachers in Lesotho did not get their September salaries. You will recall that we engaged in a legal strike in March, and then we suspended the strike to give government as the employer time to implement the demands. When we realized in July that government was very slow in implementing, teachers sought to an industrial action again in August. Some of the teachers who did not go to work did not take the whole month of September not going to work. They reported to work. Some of them would be out of work for 1 week in that whole month. But unfortunately, the whole salary of the month has not been paid by government.
After engaging the government to address some of your concerns, has the government reverted to you following the cabinet meeting?
Not yet. We hope. Normally, cabinet in Lesotho meets on Tuesday, so we are told. So we hope that next week, Tuesday, cabinet will meet and then decide on the matter. But if we do not agree with government, we will right away go to the court of law. The court of law will have to deal with this matter. We cannot be intimidated by government. And mind you, this is a very critical time in Lesotho where we are writing examinations on the 7th of October. Next week, when schools open on Monday, we are supposed to be sitting for examinations for our external students. But unfortunately, some teachers will not be having salaries when they have to ensure that they administer examinations. But these are issues that are done. When you look at the manner in which government has done this, you know, it leaves much to be desired.
The teachers are asking for approximately 8% salary increment. I understand the government doesn't have that kind of money due to economic challenges the country faces. So some are saying that your strike action has been ineffective. How do you respond to such criticism?
The main issue is the salary structure, which was presented this week on Tuesday. Now, the issue of 8% would be negotiated when the salary structure is complete. So to say that government doesn't have money is neither here nor there. Our strike has been very effective because as we speak, on Tuesday, government will approve the salary structure for teachers. And for us, that is an achievement.
The Ministry of Education and Training basically said 2,500 will be deducted from the salaries of the striking teachers. How is the teacher organizations going to compensate for this slash of funds?
Well, first, it has to be clear that there wasn't any deduction in the salaries. Teachers did not get their salaries, their full salaries. It would be very difficult for governments to deduct because they don't have systems in place. That is one. Two, our position is very clear. If the negotiations we had on Monday do not see the light of the day, then we will go to the court of law so that government is compelled to pay the teacher. Unfortunately, you know, in Lesotho, our unions don't have enough funding to an extent that we can pay the salaries or compensate teachers for those salaries. We just hope and pray that our negotiations will be fruitful. If not, then, like I said, we will go to court.
So what has been the reaction of the teachers so far since the government announced that 2,500 will be deducted from their salary this month?
Well, mixed reactions, but in general, teachers are ready even to continue with the strike, despite all those things that are done by government. So we are looking forward then for next week as to what is actually going to happen. But we pray that the salary structure will be approved because this is the key demand of teachers in Lesotho.
Letsatsi Ntsebolane is the spokesperson of the Lesotho Teachers Unions. He spoke with me from the capital, Maseru. They are a twin photographer popular with African celebrities and political leaders across West Africa. Together, they have become famous bloggers and popular on other social media platforms, including Instagram. Samuel Apiajan and Emmanuel Apiajan graduated from the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. They are currently the official photographers for Samira Bawumia, wife of the Ghanaian Vice President, Dr. Mahamadou Bawumia. I have one of the twins with me here, live on Nightline Africa. Hello, Emmanuel, and welcome to Nightline Africa.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Now, so tell me, how did it all begin for you?
Well, around 2007, mm-hmm. That's when we completed secondary school or senior high school, and we were just trying to find a direction where we would go with our lives, and we decided to move to Accra, where everything is happening. So
Accra from?
From Kumasi. Okay. So we schooled all the way in Kumasi, and we decided to move to Accra because Kumasi was a bit slow for us. So we went to Kumasi, went to Accra, started music. That was the time when Sir Kodier, almost all the Ghanaian artists who are currently back in Ghana, that's around that time that he started. So we started music. Our dad wasn't in agreement with that, so we had to stop music. But we had this passion for, should I say, media, for entertainment, for everything that deals with social media. So we decided to just still keep ourselves in the media. But on that condition, our dad told us to go back to school. So went to KNUST and I studied landscape architecture.
Mm-hmm.
Then my brother did post-harvest technology. That's a specialist.
So where did the photography come in?
So even on campus, we're still doing events, organizing seminars, bringing a lot of celebrities on campus, doing a lot of movie premieres. So I think photography found... It's found us in the sense that almost everything that we did, we didn't have anything to show. Especially, we didn't have any memories. So we decided to get a camera. Then we started taking pictures of almost everything that we did.
So you literally learned on the job?
Yeah, we learned on the job. YouTube, just watching people, how they did it. So if you take a picture like this and it's not good, you just ask yourself, like, how did this person get this quality of picture? And we'll go and do our research, and it's ended us with taking very good images in Ghana.
So take me through from completing KNUST and being employed by the president's office, basically to work for the second lady.
Yeah. So back on campus, we're politically inclined. We were part of TESCON, that's an NPP or New Patriotic Party tertiary.
You mean the governing party in Ghana now?
Exactly.
Right.
So during that time, we're helping people with elections on campus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, on campus, politically, when it comes to elections on campus, the governing party or parties are involved in campus elections. So we're very influential with pushing people. We're very popular on campus. So we use that influence to push a lot of people on campus. So right after the university, someone approached us and was like, you people take pictures. You people are very active on social media, very popular on social media. So it's 2016 elections. We are trying to use social media as a tool to reach out to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
So why don't you guys come up with a concept or a proposal whereby we're going to use social media to also influence the election? So we met the Second Lady of Ghana, Her Excellency Samira Baumia, and we gave her a proposal how we can use social media and also photography. And she just liked the idea, and we hit it off. And fortunately for us, we won elections, and here we are.
So you've traveled with her, to a number of places. Which is your favorite so far, and how has it been for you going there and working for her?
She is the currently she's the global ambassador for Clean Cooking Alliance. It's an alliance where they're advocating for clean cooking, especially in Africa, where a lot of people use firewoods, go long distance to get firewood, and there are a lot of things that happen on the road, especially women being raped, animals biting, snakes biting, and all that. So she's an advocate whereby we use clean cooking materials to mm-hmm. make cooking very good. So we recently came for an event here in the States, in New York, and I think that's a memorable event. I met the former president of U.S., Bill Clinton, His mm-hmm. Excellency Bill Clinton, and I think it was one of the most memorable things trips I've gone with her.
So far, how has it been working for the First Lady?
The
Second Lady, sorry.
Yeah.
How satisfactory is it? What has been the response that you've been getting from Ghana and beyond?
She's a motivation to us. I've learned a lot from her. She knows what she's about. She knows what she wants. Time conscious, very strict, but she's still very okay to work with. She's one of the best people we've worked with, and we've taken a lot of experiences from her advice. She supports us. I'm supposed to be in the office right now, but I'm still here because she's supporting our dream. She's pushing us to be the best that we can be.
So tell me, you talked about your dream.
Yeah.
What is the dream? What is the future prospect? What do you want to achieve?
Well, with a dream for Twins Donberg, unfortunately, my brother is not here. I wished he was here, but he's also doing other stuff. But with our dream, we want to use photography to tell the African story,
mm-hmm.
To change the narrative about Africa. Africa is a very beautiful place. Ghana is a beautiful place. Amazing food, amazing culture, amazing talent, amazing musicians. And we want to use photography to tell that story, to let people know that there's a lot to come and enjoy in Africa. And fortunately, this year is the year of return in Ghana. And we have a lot of Hollywood actors, celebrities, a lot of people from the diaspora coming to Ghana to have the Ghanaian feel and Ghanaian experience. So with that, the whole world needs to see what's going on in Ghana. And I think from Twins Donberg perspective, we're going to use that to tell people that they should come and see Ghana, come and check Ghana. Amazing hotels, amazing places to visit, amazing people.
Somebody was telling me about an advocacy work that you're doing in terms of conscientizing the youth about violence against women and all that. Talk to me about that.
Well, using photography, you can take a picture, and when anybody sees it, it tells a lot. Pictures are just there advocating for violence against women. Women are amazing people. We are feminists. I always say we are feminists because we are always around women. And with that, we are creating this program whereby we are training a lot of women in photography. Mm-hmm. And with that, you are empowering women, and an empowered woman knows what she wants, knows what she's about, and wouldn't sit down for anybody to go over her. So if you empower women, it means you are strengthening them, you are making them better, and they wouldn't allow anybody to go over them.
Are you following the trend of the famous Ghanaian who said that if you educate a man, you educate an individual, but continue?
If you educate a woman, you educate the whole country.
Good. Well, that was Emmanuel Apiajan, a photographer popular with African celebrities and political leaders. He joined me live from here in Washington, D.C. And right now it's music from our African collection. You're hearing Nilante featuring Chimney Crane, Baby Be Mine. Jolie follows with Sina, Wizkid featuring Drake with Come Closer, Izzel Hold Me Down next, and then we end with Inobis featuring Diamond Platnumz, Yope.
Makes me just wanna brace it, yeah, the way you shake it, like you really do the shake up for me. So you gonna be my harmony,
baby, you harmonize me,
sweet agony. Sugar for my Gary, the baby be mine. Can't make you no try. See how she just fine. Oh, she be hot. She be hot like that. She give me the sign. Can't make you no try. For me, she the wine. Oh, so hot. She be hot like that. Daddy, 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 da. While lying, my heart beats for her body. My heart beat for her body, it be like divine. She could be mine, it be like in shine. Take all my eye, all that you deserve, my full love. All the talking of loving, she opens up and receive me. The baby be mine, can't make you no try. See how she just fine, oh, she be hot, she be hot like that. She give me this sign, can't make you no try. For me she the one, oh, so hot, she be hot like that.
Yeah, baby make you whine for me, like a ligoto. We going deeper, this be in total. The only time you see us fight is with a pillow. Though I lie, I be searching for your love, to my pillow low. Baby make you bend up for me, but I don't step it. Kapani kuta me je krabeshe. You so wanna Jimmy and I better, and then you so and Jimmy Boka keke. Shorty, I can take you there. Phone soon, I'm my friend. Promise no go keep you chair. Chairman, I open and make a place you first. Shorty, I can take you there. Phone soon, I'm my friend. But new pan, I can hear me with your bonnelle. Halle warning, they can try and look stupid, my baby.
Daddy, 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 da. Wallahi, wallahi. My heart beats for her body. Daddy, 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 da. Wallahi, see, baba, you be sugar for my guy. The baby be mine. Can't make you no try. She just fine, oh, she be hot, she be hot like that. She give me the sign, oh, can't make you no try, oh. For me she the one, oh, so hot, she be hot like that. The baby be mine, oh, can't make you no try, oh. See how she just fine, oh, she be hot like that. She give me the sign,
she give me the sign,
can't make you no try.
She give me the sign,
for me she the one, oh, so hot, she be hot like that.
Woo! Nilante, Chimney Crane, one bad hit, bash. God, you know about it, yo.
Maro, señorita,
watoto la moroko mara obisidika oh, hauna ke fix longo longo mapenzi yako changanyo pongongo waridi naenukia sifando nyingi sana baby huniambia mahaba yani mwagikia mambondo ya mefanda wakere kwa waumia asina asina hali sina asina 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 swali sina asina asina wanga wanywe vidonge
drop the girls that bounce along. Me no let nothing come between me and me paper. So when we come in, I de place me on that take up.
I don't feel that way with anybody.
hair smell like the tropics, your body look nice. One fuck can't hold me, we gotta go twice. I'm here for you, just tell me what you like. I wanna put you in my life, yeah.
This to your man. You gotta know how to be loyal. And if you don't, I don't wanna practice no infidelity. When you wanna hold me down, just bring me your body. We can't let it fall apart when things don't go our way. Don't go our way. If only my
music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of our Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Saleh, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Saida Hamdoun, and our engineer for today, John Dryden, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, ask the elders, say, the elephant does not limp when walking on thorns. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.